The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. When we have a quorum, we will get started. When we do have a quorum, we'll break in and do some business here. So with that, let's start with House File 2820, the Fenton Bill. And I will move House File 2020 when we have a quorum. So, Representative Fenton, welcome to the committee. Before we get started here, is there anyone in the audience wishes to testify on behalf of this bill? Anyone wish to testify with concerns on the bill? Does the department wish to make comments on the
bill? Thank you, not at this time.
Okay. So with that, we will start. Please present your bill, Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2820 is a result of a strong collaboration between the cities and Washington County for more than 3 years. What the bill does is rename Washington County's Housing and Redevelopment Authority to a community development agency. Washington County believes that the private sector drives the economy, and this new CDA would be a one-stop shop of shared resources with cities for attraction of new business and while retaining existing business. There are also provisions for strong local control protection within this bill. So any economic development will start and stop with the municipalities. So far, more than 20 cities have passed or approved this bill as a whole in the language. And I'd like to praise Washington County in doing their due diligence in working really hard to get strong, defined language with other cities. With that, I will turn it over to Commissioner Miron.
Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, I'm Fran Miron from Washington County, serving as Washington County Commissioner representing District 1, which is the northern area of Washington County.
Welcome, committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Fenton indicated, Washington County would like to become more and have a more active role in economic development. We took on that interest based on a citizen survey that was done, as Representative Fenton indicated, 3 years ago. Our citizens wanted the county to become more engaged in economic development, providing job opportunities for business expansion and retention within Washington County. And we've been working collaboratively with the cities since the fall of 2013. The county board wants to add value to economic development efforts through countywide promotion, programming, and partnerships through our staff at the Housing and Redevelopment Authority. We want to promote the assets of the county better. We want to work with cities and townships to offer programs that help retain businesses and attract new businesses, and we want to strengthen our partnership with the business community. Ultimately, our goal is to retain the quality of life that we have in Washington County and expand our tax base.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Taporn. I'm the Deputy Executive Director of the Washington County HRA, or Housing and Redevelopment Authority.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Washington County HRA was created under special law, and this legislation before you is an amendment to that law to add Economic Development Authority powers to the existing HRA. We believe this isn't necessarily unique in the state of Minnesota, but it does provide the county with some streamlined operations to house both of these authorities under one roof. And there are precedents for this special legislation in Dakota, Carver, and Scott counties. The one thing that I think is pertinent to your committee is that we are keeping the existing levy process and limitations as is. And we're not adding a second levy under the EDA powers. We're just limiting ourselves to the existing levy. The way that we do that is very conservative. We our levy request to the county board, which is an elected body, is based on our annual budget. And the county board approves that budget and the levy amount every year. And so we're not going to be splitting, or we'll be splitting that pot, not adding to that pot for economic development. And our levy is uniformly applied across all of the communities in Washington County. Right now, we're levying at about 90% of the maximum that we could. stand for any questions.
Okay, and with that, we do have a quorum, so I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. We are in order. Representative Simonson moves the minutes of April 19th, 2016. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Simonson. Okay, I will now move House File 2820. We've had the testimony from the author and several witnesses. We'll open up for questions from members. Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if the Department of Revenue collects data on what has happened in Dakota, Carver, and Scott, who have a comparable situation here in that they have the Housing and Redevelopment Authority as part of the community development. Do they have any data so that we know what the results have been in having this kind of new combination?
Commissioner, are you aware of any, or Representative Fenton, or maybe the department? Why don't we hear? Let's hear from the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To the Erickson question. And members, as has been posted, we'll be taking a vote on 2871 and the bill we're on 2820. Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that question at this time, so I can look into this and get back to you, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, and the committee.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Fenton, you have some comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did just want to note that the Department of Revenue did issue a finance statement on this that would say it is zero.
As far as the revenue, no.
As far.
Yeah, and that's in your packets, members. Questions for members? Chair Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to compliment Representative Fenton and the Washington County folks for what they've done in crafting this bill and the approach. We did hear it in property taxes and have had discussions with some of the advocates of the bill and the representative as well. And they've crafted in a way that I think is very responsible compared to especially as you look at the existing three we have, Mr. Chair, and one just thought, and maybe something for the committee to ponder, what we will with this have now, I think, four counties that have community development agencies or authorities in the state. They all are different, and so you've got, with them being different, you've got, you know, kind of the old, you know, is this one got a better deal than this one? And it would make sense, I think, for maybe this body to take a look at these for next year, some sort of analysis comparison, maybe developing a law that brings their authority into one law instead of this mishmash of special laws, and then focuses, I would suspect, on maybe beginning to pattern it after what they've done here in Washington County, with maybe even some more improvements. So thank you, Representative Fenton and the folks in Washington County for your work.
Thank you, Chair Draskowski. Any other questions for members? With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2820 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you,
Deputy Director.
Thank you.
Do you think you'll be the director someday? We never know. We never know. Okay, with that, we will go to item next. The next bill, Representative Simonson moves House File 3926, and this one will be later for possible inclusion. And as they're coming down, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of the Simonson bill? Yeah, anybody here is cool. Anyone else that would like to testify on behalf of this bill? And why don't we, if the pages can maybe get us some chairs around here for the folks who wish to testify. Is there anyone who wishes to testify with concerns? I think, Representative Simonson, you know what that means. No one has concerns. Well, I shouldn't say that. Would the department like to make comments on this bill? Not this time. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. So with that, we have a bill that no one's opposed to. Excuse me. So Representative Simonson moves House File 3926, and members, you'll see the revenue note in your packet. Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and duly noted on the fact that no one's opposed to our bill, so we'll keep our comments short. But I want to briefly talk a little bit about 3926 with respect to what it does and why it's important to our community of Duluth. This is not an unusual method for government to try to provide some incentive to a private developer in order to market a site that currently is not on the private tax rolls. And, Mr. Chair, as you're well aware, the City of Duluth, Duluth Central High School site has stood vacant, I think, since 2011, and you'll hear some additional testimony on that. And I would argue that this is one of the most beautiful sites in the City of Duluth, and I think there's a handout going around that shows you exactly what this particular piece of property looks out over. The City of Duluth and the school district went through a process a number of years ago about reducing the number of large high schools from 3 down to 2, and Duluth Central, as the school that we're talking about, was the school that was removed from service and has sat vacant ever since. And it's a challenge, as you'll hear from the testimony, in terms of trying to market to developers and get a purchase agreement, because it's a challenging site that is beautiful and accessible. However, it does still contain, you know, current school buildings, which is adds to the cost for the developer in terms of what they can do and what they can't do. So I think that this bill is incredibly important to the City of Duluth and our community. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll just turn it over to the ISD 709 School Superintendent Bill Gronseth.
Okay, now that's Griffin Simonson. That's northeast of where my daughter lives.
Mr. Chair, that would be correct.
Okay,
but still in close vicinity, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Okay. Welcome. If you could please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Yep, Bill Gronseth, Superintendent of Duluth Public Schools.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and distinguished members of the Taxes Committee for this opportunity. I'm here to speak in support of House File 3926, which provides incentive for private development of the former Duluth High School. The photos on the back do show that it's an incredible site. During a community-wide long-range facilities planning process, the Duluth School District reduced the number of school buildings in operation and identified properties to be sold for development. The central property, specifically at 77 acres, is one of the largest parcels of developable land within the city. And as Representative Simon said, it has one of the most incredible views in the city. Private redevelopment of the central site provides an opportunity to meet market demand for new housing in Duluth. It encourages new businesses, generates jobs, and most importantly, increases the tax base for the school district, the city, and the county. And private development of a former school site at Woodland Avenue, right near UMD, or University of Minnesota Duluth, is doing all of this and more. It's seen really a lot of growth and has become one of the most popular areas in Duluth. We believe that the central property could do the same to add economic value to our city. And while private developers have expressed an interest in Central, and in one case even signed a purchase agreement, it proved to be the significant infrastructure challenges of the site proved to be too costly to develop for them. And this bill could be the tipping point in helping private developers address infrastructure challenges related to the site and proceed with much needed development in a more cost-effective manner. And now our school board chair, Annie Harla, would like to say a few words.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Annie Harla, and I'm the chair of the Duluth School Board.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. And so as a school district, we're not in the development business. We're in the education business and want to make sure that we're focusing our efforts on that, but also as a strong community partner. And we are making sure that we're partnering with other government entities like the City of Duluth and St. Louis County as well, just to make sure that our properties are attractive for development. And passage of this bill would be a concrete benefit because we as a district could provide to, that we could could provide to provincial developers that would be substantially, that would substantially help marketing our property. And this would continue to work jointly with the city and county to look for local incentives, but also that can go hand in hand with state assistance. And this bill would go a long way in helping to sell the property and be a way that our community can come together around the future of our on this future and beautiful site. And it would be a very large benefit to Duluth as a whole. And so I would respectfully urge you to please support House File 3926. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Anyone else like to testify, or do we have resource people here?
Resource.
We have our Chief Financial Officer, Bill Hansen, here to answer any questions you might have.
Wonderful. Okay, questions from committee members. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm interested in what the long-range facilities needs are for Duluth. And the reason I'm asking the question, the school district that I represent part of went through some school closings a number of years ago. They closed a middle school and a high school, and they made the decision to tear down the middle school, and that's now townhomes. They developed the site. It wasn't as large as yours. I think it was 17 acres or something like that where the middle school was. But the high school was closed. And today now the high school has been reopened. It's a middle school. Now I'm talking about a long period of time. And so my fundamental question, I think it's probably of the superintendent, would be what are the long-range plans in terms of your facility needs?
Superintendent?
At the time of the long-range facilities plan was really laid out almost 10 years ago now, we had a declining enrollment, and that declining enrollment has continued. At that time, we almost could have gone to one high school rather than two, and we do have capacity in both of our remaining high schools for future growth, should that be the case.
Chair Carlson.
I think that, Mr. Chairman, answers the question. That was 1982 when they closed those, but the one building was used for a variety of things through the years. It wasn't totally vacated. They utilized it for some private nonprofits for a time, but now it's pretty much functioning as the one of the middle schools. It's a large school district, kind of like Duluth. It formerly had three high schools, and now they have two. That was my only question, what the long-range approach would be, and it sounds like you've got the long-range plan, so thank you.
Representative Earhart, Chairman Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious, how long is the school district going to stay linked to this? Are they just selling the stuff and getting out, or are they going to be involved in the development from the standpoint of income flow and so forth to the district, or what is you guys just bailing out on the land and
Superintendent?
Our hope would be to sell the parcel as one unit. We have had some discussion of selling it in smaller parcels, but that wouldn't be our preference.
Chairman Earhart?
No, I was just wondering if you were going to have, Mr. Chairman, if you were going to have an enterprise personnel to support your schools. Have you ever thought about that?
Superintendent?
We have, and the original plan for the long-range facilities plan included the proceeds from the sale of these properties.
Chairman Earhart?
No, you're going to take the money and run and then blow it, but that's all right. I thought maybe you could develop something in long-term here that takes some effort off the taxpayers. But that's all right. Do what you had to do there. It's a beautiful site. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Questions for members? Okay, with that, Representative Simonson renews his motion moves House File 3926 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Chair, Finance Director. Okay, item last, we have House File 2871. And I will move House File 2871. Be referred to the general register. I think there's a couple amendments we have to.
I have an amendment.
Okay. Okay, to get this bill in the shape I would like, I would do we? Do everybody have this? Okay, let's just hold up here a second. We've got an amendment here, the A16-1077. I'm just going to maybe get into a description of the amendment until all the members have had a chance to look at it and ask any questions that they may have. Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi, would you like to go over the amendment, the A16-1077 amendment, Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, essentially all this amendment does is to combine the department's technical and policy bills by amending the policy bill into the technical bill without change. I believe that there will be a separate amendment to the amendment to delete one of the sections of the policy bill that relates to county program aid.
Okay.
But otherwise, the way the department described its two bills, they would be combined into one bill. Then with the change, you would delete the provision that relates to the county program aid.
Okay. So, first of all, is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of the bill? Okay. The department would like to. Is there anyone in the audience that has concerns about the amendment or the bill itself? Is there anybody who really cares? Other than myself, of course. With that being said, so this is the department technical bill. Let's work on getting this in the shape that the department would like, I guess we'd say, and the author. So first of all, are there questions to the A16-1077 amendment? If not, members, I have. I'll move to amend the A16-1077 amendment. House file 2071 as follows. And I'm just going to, this one's going to be done orally. And it's page 9, delete section 3. Ms. Dalton should come and explain what the amendment to the amendment does.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what that does is it removes the delayed effective dates for the data used in the county CPA calculation. This was the only thing that was, you know, the counties came forward and they had some concerns with this language.
And Mr. Cummings, is that fine with the department?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the tax policy manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. We think the data lag provision for the county program aid does match LGA in a very helpful and substantial way. We have heard the concerns that have been brought up by the counties, and as the committee and the conference committee does look at reforms to the county program aid formula, we look forward to working with the committee to consider this provision later on as other changes to CPA are being made.
Okay. So with that, I will move the amendment to the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the amendment as amended. Any discussion on the amended amendment? Good. Then I have to say that again. Oh, Mr. Cumming.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I just wanted to thank you. The department thanks you very much for including both of the policy and technical bill items moving forward. Again, many folks really do want to make sure that the tax code works well for all Minnesotans, and this will help to do that. In addition, Mr. Chair, I wanted to thank you, and I wanted to thank your staff. You have, and also the DFL nonpartisan staff as well, and the partisan and nonpartisan staff. They have been, the House staff has been really great to work with. And I could go through with individual stories on each of them and how we've worked well together. But I really did want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank your staff, and thank the members of this committee for considering this bill.
Well, it might be a little premature. We don't have it passed yet. No, I appreciate that. So, to the amended amendment, Chair Anderson S.
Well, Mr. Chair, did I just hear Mr. Cummins saying that the House staff is better than the Senate?
That's what I heard. That's exactly what I heard.
Minus profits.
Mr. Cummings,
Mr. Chair, I'm just a resource.
Why don't you wait here? Why don't you wait here? Because there might be other questions when we get this in the shape that I'd like. So we are on the A16-1077 amendment as amended. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 2871 as amended. So with that, who would like to do the walkthrough here? Is this Ms. Mann, Mr. Michael, or Ms. Mr. Cummings, do you want to go through? Oh, we did the walkthrough on it, yeah, before. Maybe just an update on what we're doing here. Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Michael did a good job at laying out what the bill does in terms of the technical bill. I know that this is the first I've seen of the amendment. I know the amendment was sent to other staff at the Department of Revenue earlier in order to ensure that the estimate was correct, but so this bill would add both the policy and technical bill and remove the CPA data lag provision.
Okay. So with that, let's go to maybe Mr. Michael, just an overview. We've had parts of these before, just kind of overviews to what we're doing here, and then we will get into amendments and then member questions. Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, under the if you look at the House Research Bill summary, that summarizes the bill as amended. And so you can see that Article 1 is the department's original technical bill. There was an amendment that was made in tax committee to that bill, and that's the Section 3 of that, of Article 1, that clarifies. This was an issue that was raised by some practitioners that the definition of the taxable estate needed to be changed slightly so that it included taxable gifts, because they're not deducted on the federal level, they're excluded. But otherwise, that's Article 1 is all of the provisions of the original department's technical bill. Article 2 is the department's policy bill from that has provisions relating to the individual income and the corporate franchise tax. If you'll recall, some of the important changes that were made here is the change in the date when employers are required to file their W-2s with the department. This is a part of the department's initiative to reduce the probability of essentially fraudsters, as the department refers to them, filing false tax returns and claiming refunds. This would eventually will allow the department to match W-2 data with the filed returns so that the individuals filing fraudulent returns usually do not have access to the employee's W-2, and so they would not know those amounts and could not enter them. It also changes the annual withholding returns and provides that in line with the federal changes that provides for entity level auditing of pass-through entities that S corporations and partnerships could request the department to do the audits on those basis, so those provisions are in there. Article 3 contains the provisions from the department's policy bill with regard to property tax and local aids. This is the article that contained the county CPA provision that's deleted. It also has provisions that relate to utility and railroad valuations. Article 4 is again the article from the department's policy bill that changes the partnership returns to the date that they file so that it's consistent with the federal filing deadline. And Section 2 of that is the provision that reverses the Minnesota Supreme Court's recent decision in the Conexus Energy versus Commissioner case. That's the case in which the Minnesota Supreme Court essentially held that the erroneous refund statute runs 2 years rather than the standard 3.5 years. So this would match that with the regular return. So the fact that a taxpayer files for a refund quickly, or files an amended return requesting a refund shortly after filing their original return, would not have the effect of actually shortening the statute of limitations from 3.5 years to 2 years, which is the effect of what the Minnesota Supreme Court decision did. So that's sort of a brief run-through. If members have questions about specific provisions, I think the department would probably be the best one to answer those.
Okay. I think I have some folks here on my list, but I think why don't we get to amendments so we see how the bill ends up here before we get into questions. Chair Dabney?
Mr. Chair, I've got the A8 amendment.
Okay, let's pass that out.
So I'd like to move the, let's get this right, H2871A8. Thank you, Ryan. Mr. Chair, it's April 20th. Which means that April 18th happened a couple of days ago, which means maybe we can finally tackle tax conformity. Hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans filed their taxes this year and paid taxes they didn't have to, because this body has not acted on tax conformity with changes made on the federal side. The A8 amendment pulls out a number of provisions from last year's federal taxes that we should conform with, focused on supporting middle-class Minnesotans, focused specifically on educators and education expenses, some health care ones, and then a number of important individual provisions. It aligns with federal law on the educator classroom expense deduction. That's been around for several years, but the feds made it permanent. Minnesota should follow through and support our educators who pay out-of-pocket for classroom expenses for their students. It further supports Minnesotans working on higher education opportunities by allowing expanded deductions and expands the income limit for deductions of higher education tuition and other expenses. It conforms with federal law on allowing computer technology to be an allowable use of your 529 plans. We want Minnesotans to be planning for their children's college education. We want them to be setting money aside. 529 plans, we had a conversation about last year in this committee that I recall, Mr. Chair, are one valid and viable way to do that. Computers are kind of a necessity these days for college students, and this simply allows them to use the monies in their 529 plan for computer technology. It also excludes certain scholarships from having to pay income tax on that. It's a technical provision, but it certainly is important to those students who are required to participate in a work-learning service sort of program as part of conditions for receiving a scholarship. Other pieces I'd like to highlight, we had an interesting and maybe a little energetic conversation in here yesterday about wages and Minnesotans who work hard but don't get paid much. One historically bipartisan way of supporting those lower income working families is the working family credit, as we call it in Minnesota. We should comply or conform with federal law, increasing the phase out of that by an additional $5,000, and then indexing that so that lower-income working families see that glimmer, that light at the end of the tunnel that they can continue to work for. There's a couple of other provisions, but importantly, it supports individuals who are looking at rolling over their IRAs into a simple IRA, or their retirement savings into simple IRAs. Again, as we want people planning for their children's college experience, we also want Minnesotans planning for their own retirement. This simplifies it. It's specific to airline workers. Delta is still an important base here and has a lot of employees, Sun Country, others in the airline industry. We've got a lot of middle-class airline workers here. We should support their ability to roll over their retirement savings into simple IRAs. And then one interesting piece is, and has been getting quite a bit of news here, we've got three individuals who came forward who were wrongfully incarcerated in Minnesota. And there's a bill moving through to compensate them for the years that they spent wrongfully in prison. As current law stands, they have to pay income tax on that settlement. I think we can all say that if you were wrongfully incarcerated by the state of Minnesota, you've paid your dues. And you shouldn't have to pay income tax on the compensation from the state that you're receiving for what we did badly and wrongfully. So, Mr. Chair, with that, again, the A8 amendment starts the process towards tax conformity, something that I certainly think we should have done quite a while ago, but now the tax day is passed, we can do it today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair Dabney. A couple things here. First of all, you stated several times that the airline employees would go to a simple IRA. I don't think they could do that because a simple IRA is for a business person. And the bill does say traditional IRA. So I think for the record, on if you look at page 7, line 7.13, it says to a traditional IRA. I don't think legally they could put it in a simple, but I think the language is correct here. On that,
thank you, Chair.
And Mr. Michael, on page 7, line 7.17, we had some compelling testimony, was yesterday or two days ago, in, I think it was Ways and Means, regarding several individuals that were wrongly convicted. And the comment was made in Ways and Means that portions of the settlement would be subject to income tax and others would not. Do we know, this would just make sure that none of it was, or do we know what parts we were talking about in Ways and Means? Or, what they said in Ways and Means was that portions would be includable to income, portions would not be. How do you understand that?
Mr. Chairman, I do not, I have not looked carefully at the federal law. I know that basically the restitution and civil damages, and there are some other things that are excluded under the federal law. I'm not sure with what some monies that they may have, may be getting may be taxable. If this provision were to pass, obviously this is passed federally, and so some of it, if they will qualify federally already, but this would just allow the same treatment for the Minnesota purposes.
Okay, and then just so members of the public understand, we had meetings with the department, and they requested that we not pass conformity until after tax deadline day, which you did bring up, Chairman Dabney, that so it could certainly be done now and work with the department. But I really, really like what you're doing, but I hope everybody votes it down unanimously. It won't be unanimous. you know, when I was in school, in grade school, and maybe I've told this story before, but if I had done something wrong, and Chair Dabney has done nothing wrong, this is a very good amendment, I like the content of it, but my teacher would often say, Gregory Michael, and I knew that it was serious at that point, and today is not the day. And I think that kind of reminds me of this amendment, the A8 amendment. Today is probably not the day. We want to get I would prefer getting a bill as amended that we have before us. These are all items that I hope we can get in the conference committee and more. And because, Mr. Michael, this, help me out here, this is not total conformity. This is, picks out a few items that I certainly support. I always support something and then vote against it. But, Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, yes, this is not full conformity. It does not include all of the provisions of the federal laws.
And that's fine. It's just so members understand that it says federal update, federal conformity. If we would, I would personally like to go a little further. Chair Carl.
Mr. Chairman, to partially answer that particular question, we have a series of amendments that would move us more in the direction than just that single amendment to in the direction of conformity.
Okay.
If you'll notice, there's several of us here that have amendments by our seat.
That have piles.
I don't have the big pile I told you about the other day, but
Well, there's a card outside up there. So, okay. Discussion to the amendment before the H28718 amendment. Members, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how often did the teacher say, today's not the day, David Michael?
Well, Representative McDonald, it was quite often.
I thought so. No, the question. The real question is some of the items in Representative's amendment, I believe, aren't they in the omnibus bill in the conference committee currently?
Yes.
The computer and the 501-529 plans?
Representative McDonald, we do have some conformity issues in conference, not necessarily these specifically. In fact, it's not these specifically because there's some things that have been added on which I think make a lot of sense. But we will see how this session progresses on these types of things. I'm a big conformity guy. At the request of the department, I backed off early on. Of course, we didn't come until March 8th. So, and the reasoning from the department, and I think made a very good case, was that it would really mess them up if they're going through all the tax returns, and then in mid-March, we pass conformity. So a lot of people would have filed their taxes without conformity, and then a lot would have. And so they would rather just take a look and see what we do at the end of the day on May 23rd, and then they can adjust it from there. That'd be much better for them. So, but okay, so Representative McDonald?
That's fine, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that you, too, agree that federal conformity is important. I think we talked about it at our first meeting, and we got the advice from the Department of Revenue that would actually make it easier if they were able to do well with it after the deadline and then go back and adjust people's returns, and they said they had the capacity to do that. But I also remember, Mr. Chair, that you told us your plans did not include bringing much to the floor, if anything. And we have now a bill before us that is non-controversial, bipartisan support, is going to the floor. It may be our only vehicle. Today may be the day that we should do conformity, because this is a tax bill that will go to the floor. And we all, I think, care about making sure that taxpayers get the federal benefits that were passed late in 2015 that will lighten their burden. And so I think, actually, Mr. Chair, respectfully, you might want to rethink that, because I think today's a good day. We've got a bill that's going to the floor, and we'd be honoring your desire not to have too many tax bills heading to the floor this year.
Thank you for your efforts to help me out, and I appreciate that more than you know. Representative Earhart, Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, I don't know if you're talking about a vehicle here or what, but we had a number of bills in Representative Luskowski's committee this morning that are being laid over for what? Because I would think they'd be passed on to here, and they're non-controversial, they're housekeeping for the cities and so forth that are involved in them, and if this is non-controversial, there should be hacked onto this, and we should go forward with them. So I don't know. What are you doing with that stuff? If you're not getting them, what is Representative Daskowski? You keep a firm hand on him, don't you?
I wouldn't quite characterize it like that. But right now, members, let's be clear on something here. With the policy technical bill, if some people may say, well, the question will come up, is this a vehicle bill? Let's just clear it up right now. Yes, it is. So I'd like to keep it at that, and I'd like to work with Chair Dabney on these issues and see if we can't get these in. We've got a great group of conferees in the Senate and the House, and we would like to, at the behest of the department, get the bill clean to the floor, and I'm sure that there's other amendments you have that are going to be hard for me to vote no on, but I will. That's kind of the way it works. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when you say a vehicle bill, and I'm glad that you were up front about that, but there are a couple of ways it could become a vehicle bill. Are you indicating then if it passes out that you will have amendments from the majority on the House floor? Or will you just simply pass it over to the Senate? And you and I have had discussions, we're in committee here, about how you were going to handle in the current conference committee bills that had not passed either body that we might want to see passed into law if there were to be a compromise in that conference committee. So if you could maybe give us a little bit more information on what you mean by a vehicle bill and when it becomes a vehicle, because I could see a scenario where you pass this over to the Senate and then it comes back with some pre-negotiations perhaps between yourself and the Senate, and they include the necessary legislation that will allow you to take issues up in the conference committee. So, Mr. Chairman, if you could enlighten us.
And the answer is yes. All the above. All the above could happen. And I don't know exactly what direction this will go, but I first chaired a committee in 1999. It was the Commerce Committee, and I learned that when you got, deadlines were there, it was the Policy Committee, and all of a sudden all these things at the end of the session needed to happen. I didn't have any bills out there to do anything with. I learned that one the hard way in 1999. And so ever since then, as a rule, I will shoot several bills to the floor because I don't know if leadership agrees that they want to load up this in the House or if leadership, and this is above my pay grade, well, not, I make a lot more than they do, like the governor and stuff, but it's above my pay grade as far as decision-making as to how this is going to go. This is a vehicle bill. It'll be sitting on the floor, and I think everything you said is a possibility. If leadership comes together and says we're going to do it this way, then we do it this way. If they say we're going to shoot it over and pre-conferee type of thing from the Senate, that's a possibility. I don't know exactly where this thing is going to go. I just know that I need a vehicle. Well, there's a song in there. I be your vehicle, take you anywhere you want to go. Remember that, Griffin Blush? Yeah, good song. So this is the vehicle bill that could go either way. Chair Carl.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, and I've been there, done that. I moved out vehicle bills when I was chair of the Finance Committee and also Ways and Means, and then parked them. So what I'm really asking then, and I've just to clarify, so there's not a plan yet. The plan right now is to just move this out and park it on the House floor for decisions to be made later.
That is correct. That's correct, because as you know, Chair Carlson, as we get to 3 days out, 2 days out before the end of session, you know, stuff starts flying, there's an agreement, boom, it could go on here out of the House, we could shoot it over to the Senate, have them shoot it back. I don't know. I've heard both scenarios. And other scenarios.
No.
So I can't do it if I don't, and I that's why I just want the policy technical bill from the department, nothing controversial in here, park it, see where it goes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, but from what you're saying, this may or may not be, but there's a risk from our perspective. We're very interested in conformity. We think it helps Minnesota taxpayers. And if you were to attach the various amendments that we're going to offer here this morning, at least from our perspective, then we would have, and I assume there are people interested on your side of the aisle, you said you were interested personally, then we've got at least conformity if these amendments go on the House floor as it sits there waiting for future discussions and action. But it would give this committee an opportunity to at least move conformity forward along with the department's bill.
And Chair Carlson, I understand that and couldn't agree with more as far as that the conformity part is important. We do have conformity in the conference report. It's there. And I've been, if you go into my office, just to my right, there's a two little books or pamphlets. One is the joint rules and one is the House rules. And I've actually been reading them because I'm trying to figure out how to make this thing work. And we have conformity currently sitting there. And so I don't think really anyone would disagree that conformity is conformity, and we could move that forward already. Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, but the conformity that's there does not necessarily coincide with the amendments that we're offering here. And that raises an interesting question on the joint rules, then. If you've got some conformity in terms of expanding in conference committee conformity issues that haven't passed either body. because you have a limited amount of conformity in conference committee, if I recall from last year. And so that does raise the issue then of what kind of expansion you can do under the rules in that conference committee.
Yes, absolutely. And that will be determined certainly by others, folks other than myself. But as I read the rules, conformity is conformity. And if you look at the rules, there's a paragraph that I will be probably using quite a bit in the next few weeks on that issue. So I like the Dabney Amendment, but I would just say today's not the day. And
well,
and I think we can, I hope we can get some of these things in there.
Yeah. Chair, if I may, Mr. Chairman, if you're using a rule to broaden the jurisdiction of the conference committee because there's some conformity in there, and I'll take a look, I'll take your advice and take and reread that rule. I do generally know the rules fairly well. When you come back from conference committee, if there are new issues, and conformity one of them, that often leads to an interesting floor debate. And you have people in both caucuses that watch those rules very carefully. And quite honestly, I've come back with some major conference committee reports and had to defend the expansion of some language. I always thought I was on firm footing, but there were others in the body that sometimes thought that the expansion probably went too far in terms of defining what was a new issue. And if you do it up front now, you avoid those kinds of debates.
Point well taken. Further discussion, Chair Dabney.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate your positive comments about the content, if not the method and the timing of the A8. I'm with Representative Loeffler. I think this is the day. And I also think that the best way to somehow shoehorn this year's conformity into last year's tax bill in conference is to start with a strong House position. So with that, I'd ask for a roll call on the A8 amendment, please.
Roll call having been requested.
Thank you.
Further discussion. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll on the Dabney amendment, the H2871A8.
Chair Davids.
No.
Vice Chair Barrett. Anderson.
No.
Anzel. Carlson.
Aye.
Dabney.
Aye.
Drazkowski.
No.
Earhart.
Yes.
Erickson.
No.
Garofalo. Hackbart. Knobloch.
No.
Gosnick.
No.
Lesch.
Aye.
Loeffler.
Yes.
Loon.
No.
McDonald.
No.
Petersburg.
No.
Simonson.
Aye.
Swazinski.
No.
Torkelson.
No.
Wills.
No.
Vice Chair Barrett.
No.
There being six ayes, and 13 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I maybe didn't get to the crux of my question, because what happens to bills that are being laid over in the property tax division? I never heard of one coming out of the a bill coming out of directly to the floor. I suppose that's possible. Normally it would come to your committee, so laying something over, what does that mean? In that committee without forwarding them to your committee.
And thank you, Chair Hart. I don't think those issues have been decided yet either. They've had their hearings. We tried to, and I believe in full taxes, we gave a hearing to every bill that there's a request for, I believe, and I don't know, Chair Drazkowski runs the property tax division. And so that's yet to be determined. We have a lot of bills that we've heard that are sitting there. And we have not, we do not have exact direction yet as to how that's all going to play out. I guess I just say I don't know.
That's good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I don't think it's good that I don't know. I'd like to know, actually.
I mean, that's a good answer.
Okay. And with that, how many more amendments are we looking at? We've got Loeffler, Carlson, Clemenson, about three or four here. Okay. Who would like to go next? Chair, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A9 amendment.
Okay.
And while that's being distributed, I can say it's another in the federal conformity.
That's wonderful. Please describe your amendment.
Sure. Well, yesterday we had a long discussion on the value of home ownership and to communities, and both stabilizing the communities as well as stabilizing the families that benefit from it. And our tax policies have always traditionally supported home ownership in a variety of ways. And this A9 amendment continues that tradition by conforming to the recent federal actions at the end of 2015 to allow for both itemizing the deduction for mortgage insurance premiums, which is a expensive, costly part of home ownership for people who are just starting out. And it also deals with the problem of short sales by not making them pay taxes on that short sale. And while my area is, I was talking to a real estate agent recently, they are not seeing as many short sales and foreclosures. They still are, and we still have a lot of Minnesota, particularly in greater Minnesota, that's still economically depressed. And short sales are not that unusual, and they are a major financial burden for people who, because of job changes, have been forced to sell into a market in which they're not able to recover the cost of their mortgage. And in addition, it has the provisions that were in the earlier Dabney Amendment, because we weren't sure if you'd take that one, related to deductibility of health insurance costs, expanded eligibility for the Working Family Credit that was enacted by Congress since we last met, a minor adjustment for the ABLE programs, and the simple IRAs and the provisions for wrongful incarceration that were mentioned earlier. And so I think that this is a way for us to help out, particularly those good families who invested in a home, did and were caught by declining home values, whether it was continuing lingering effects of the recession or it's because their town has lost a major employer and there's just no demand for the housing in that particular community and they've had to move elsewhere for employment. And so I would hope that we would take a positive position on this. And moving on to the House floor, I think it's a strong statement on our part that this is important, and I think it would strengthen your hand in whatever route goes forward to say that we individually and collectively have felt that this is a priority for our residents. And with that, I'd ask for a roll call again.
Roll call having been requested. There will be a roll call. A couple questions that I would have, then we'll go to member questions. If Mr. Michael, if you look at the Dabney Amendment, page 7, line 7.11 on certain IRA rollovers, that language made sense. On page 2 of the Loeffler Amendment, if you start like at about 2.22, let's go 2.23, certain government plans rollovers permitted from other retirement plans into a simple retirement account. That'd be a simple. How can you do that?
Mr. Chair, that is a different provision that Congress enacted that allowed those rollovers into simple plans that this would conform to.
Okay,
and there is
Dabney. I didn't think he could do that.
The airline pilots, that's only the bankrupt, it's only for those bankrupt carriers, and that's different. That is into a traditional IRA, the classic kind of rollover you would think. But the deal is that it allows them to go retroactive with their settlements through the bankruptcy. So they're two different provisions of the federal law.
But, Mr. Michael, on page 2 of the Loeffler Amendment, aren't we, how, I guess we can do whatever we want, but how can we allow an individual to have a simple?
Mr. Chairman, I think the simple answer is on that sort of thing, Congress can do anything it wants, and it chose to do that.
Good answer. Representative Lafa, I really like your amendment. I would encourage everyone to vote no on it. Now, Representative Lafa, you mentioned that where does this take care of the short sales? I really like that provision that Chair Davin had brought up probably a few weeks ago. Is this the one that does the short sales?
Yep.
Yeah. Where does it, Mr. Michael, where does this do the short sales? Because we
Mr. Chairman, it's in section 2. You'll see if you look on the verbal reference, I don't know off of the top of my head the section reference of federal law, but if you look on 2.19 to 2.2, the extension and modification of the exclusion from gross income to discharge of qualified principal residence indebtedness.
Okay, so on 2.20, it's not only the indebtedness, but also the mortgage premiums you want to spread out over 30 or 15 years to be all up front.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I like that. So I hope everyone votes no with that. So further discussion to the H2871A9 amendment. With that, the committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Davids.
No.
Vice Chair Barrett.
No.
Anderson.
No.
Carlson.
Aye.
Davney.
Aye.
Drazkowski.
No.
Earhart.
Yes.
Erickson.
No.
Knobloch. Koznick.
No.
Lesch.
Aye.
Loeffler.
Aye.
Loon.
No.
McDonald.
No.
Petersburg.
No.
Simonson.
Aye.
Swazinski.
No.
Torkelson.
No.
Wills.
No.
There being 6 ayes and 12 nays, the amendment is not adopted. We're going to be able to say I voted against before I voted for it. I think it's how that works. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment.
If you could have the page you had it off, please.
And
Mr. Good while it's being passed out, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I, as you well know, I've brought other legislation forward dealing with nonprofits, and this one deals with charitable contributions. In fact, I think one or two of my other bills are in that conference committee. But this one has several provisions, and the charitable contributions, just to walk you through them, individuals age 70 and a half or older may transfer up to $100,000 from a traditional IRA or Roth IRA directly to a qualified charity, while excluding that amount from adjusted gross income. And then that this provision would be made permanent. It provides for the increased federal adjustment gross income limit on the amount of a qualified conservation easement that may be claimed as a charitable deduction, and that would be made permanent as well. And back in my days when I was on LCCMR, we dealt quite a bit with the whole issue of easements and so on. So this would be one more incentive in that regard, in my view. Enhanced charitable contribution deduction for food inventory allowing S corporations, partnerships, and proprietors to deduct contributions for food inventory under the same rules as a C corporation, and that would be permanent as well. And if I recall correctly, we had a bill before us that was dealing with that issue or something quite similar. It would limit the basis adjustments on S corporation stock when these corporations donate. It allows contributions to agricultural research organizations to be claimed under the itemized deduction for charitable contributions. And there's a valuation rule clarified for early termination of certain charitable remainder unit trusts, and more generous depreciation rules for leasehold and restaurant improvements. And then there's a health care provision, deductibility of excess tax on high-cost employer-sponsored health coverage, health care benefits excluded from income for certain government health plans. And then there's some miscellaneous individual provisions as well. Working family credit, increased phase-out range for married joint filers by 5,000, and indexed elimination of residency requirement for the ABLE program. And I think the ABLE program is one that we passed last year, so that's a recently enacted provision. Where just a little explanation there, because it is somewhat new. That's the program where you can basically set up a trust, if you will, or an investment program where you can designate that for a disabled child, certain needs, and that kind of thing. And I know Representative Loeffler, if you needed a further explanation on the ABLE program, is on the committee that dealt with it. And an exclusion for compensation to wrongfully incarcerated individuals, and then rollovers permitted for other retirement plans into simple IRAs. So those are issues that are in the amendment, and I too would like a roll call vote. And I'm hoping that the advice from the chair will change from the previous two amendments to one of encouraging a yes vote. Although I have been known to give direction from the chair as well, but sometimes I gave direction to go in the positive direction as well, even for the minority.
And there has been a roll call requested in Representative Carlson. Chair Carlson moved the H2871810 amendment, so we've got a roll call. A discussion to the amendment. Mr. Michael, on page 7, we use the word simple again. I think that is traditional. I don't think that goes correct.
Mr. Chairman, on page 7, that is the rollovers for the airline employees, and those are into traditional plans. The provision that relates to the simple retirement accounts is in section 2. If you look on line 2.26, and I think the circumstance for that is that you have an individual who has a simple plan because they were owned a business or were an employee of a business that had a simple plan, and then this allows them to roll other retirement assets into that simple plan.
So this for so much, Michael, if they already have simple open. Oh, okay. Now, Chair Carlson described the issue of being able to deduct charitable contributions from IRAs. I don't see that part in here. That's the one where, and that is in conference. I know that's in conference already. What page? Page 2. So what that would do is, if we did nothing, you could give up to $100,000 of an RMD over age 70 and a half. You have to be over 70 and a half. You could give up to $100,000 not declared as income at the federal level currently for 2016. Oh, 2015. And like forever until they change it. Yeah, okay, so I like that provision. And that's already in the conference. I do know that. But now, okay, let's say we did nothing. I mean, I want to do something eventually, but let's say we did nothing. You could not declare it as income on the federal, which would be probably much higher because these folks are usually higher income folks, and so they could save whatever, but they'd still have to declare it as income on the state if we did nothing.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I think if no update bill passed, the Department of Revenue would very likely allow them to deduct it under the itemized deduction rules, because that's technically what our conforming to prior federal law would allow. So they would have to, they would be allowed to deduct those they would have to include it in income and then calculate the extent to which they could claim it as an itemized deduction. So if they were standard deduction filers, they would not be able to deduct the full amount of it and so forth.
Okay. I really like this amendment here. Now, on Mr. Michael, on page 7, section 7, we in all these amendments we're talking about the airlines, and actually that was, I think, my bill and Chair Atkins' bill or vice versa. Didn't we already take care of that?
Mr. Chairman, yes, you did, but Congress keeps changing it in response to, I think, you know, some of these employees not having rolled over the amount, so they keep giving them more time.
And why did Congress do that? Because they can. Okay, I really like this amendment. I hope everyone will vote no. Any further discussion? The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Davids?
No.
Vice Chair Barrett?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Dabney?
Aye.
Draskowski?
No.
Earhart?
Yes.
Erickson?
No.
Kosnick?
No.
Lesch?
Aye.
Loeffler?
Aye.
Loon?
No.
McDonald? Petersburg?
No.
Simonson?
Aye.
Swazinski?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
Wills?
No.
Ooh, you're gaining. There have been 6 ayes and only 11 nays. The motion is not adopted. The amendment is not adopted. Item next, Simonson.
Simonson. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to offer the A11 amendment.
Okay, please describe the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and as that's being passed around, I think, you know, as often as the case, fourth time will be the charm here. This one should be even more near and dear to your heart, as it deals with business and investment changes with respect to federal conformity. And I'll just walk through some of the changes that are different from some of the other amendments that we've already heard testimony to. Essentially, this amendment, Mr. Chair, would limit the amount of payments from certain controlled subsidiaries to parent-exempt organizations that are subject to the unrelated business income tax to the amount in excess of allowable payments under the arm's-length transaction rules. Preferential treatment provided to dividends of regulated investment companies. Multiple provisions, Mr. Chair, related to depreciation and expensing. More generous rules for mine safety equipment, accelerated depreciation for business property on Indian reservations, and qualified film and TV production expenses. And, of course, a second-generation biofuel plan property. The amendment would include 100% exclusion for the gain on sale of certain qualified small business stock, and increased deduction for energy-efficient commercial buildings. In addition, Mr. Chair, as I referenced, there's a number of provisions relative to health care-related provisions and miscellaneous provisions that we've already heard testimony on, so I won't repeat those, but essentially it is a the business with respect to federal conformity.
Thank you very much.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on that.
Roll call having been requested. There will be a roll call on the Simonson Amendment. Excuse me, Representative Simonson moves the H2871A11 Amendment. Has requested a roll call. There will be roll call discussion for members. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we'll see how the vote goes on this one, but I think at some point it doesn't necessarily need to be today, but I think it would be useful for us to know the separate out the things that Congress enacted at the end of 2015 that were never even thought of at the time we last met last session. And I think we really ought to know what those things are and make sure that they're not in jeopardy, because I think the taxpayers of Minnesota would really like to have the ability to take full advantage of the changes made by Congress late in last year, and make sure that we're affirmatively considering those as we move forward.
Point very well taken. In fact, I would like to see that myself. Ms. Manzi, is that something you would do for us? To find out, or who would do that, to find out what the feds did, what Congress did, and how we line up with what would need to be proposed for us to do the same? I think there's one issue, Section 179, the price tag on that is quite high, and there's a bonus depreciation. There's a couple we might have some trouble with, but I think we should know what they are. Would that be something you do, Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that list probably would appear in the Department of Revenue's estimate for any of the federal conformity bills, your bill, House File 3316, or the governor's bill, which I don't recall the number of offhand. But that the estimate typically lists all the provisions that have a revenue impact. There are dozens more provisions that do not have a revenue impact, but which we pick up, and this document is the Joint Committee on Taxation explanation of all those provisions, which you can see it's pretty thick, and I could share that with the committee, you know, who could send it to everyone, and it goes through and it explains in detail what the present law is and then what the proposed change is. Now, the vast majority of things that Congress did in the December bill, the PATH law, was to either make permanent or to extend things that they had previously done. Perhaps Representative Loeffler is asking for a list of things that had never been done before, and there may be a handful of those, but there, I think, are really very few. So that's, you know, that's something that we could prepare, but I guess I'm not really quite sure what you're asking for.
Well, Ms. Manzi, when you were talking about that stack of paper you have in your hands, or you said proposed changes. What?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. This document prepared by the Joint Committee on Taxation describes what the law was prior to the enactment of the Protecting Americans from Tax Hikes Act, and then it contrasts that with what the law did. So it's not really a proposed change. It's really what the law was changed to since that has been enacted and signed.
I agree with Representative Loeffler in that it'd be kind of nice to see what Congress did, what they actually did, and then we could figure out what we would need to, where we need to go from there to comply with everything. Wouldn't that do it, Representative Loeffler?
Mm-hmm.
Could we get something like that?
Mr. Chair, I think that would be the revenue estimate, perhaps. The revenue estimate lists all the provisions that Congress did that have a revenue impact if we choose to conform to them. So those are sort of our action items there on the revenue estimate, which you have. Now, there are a lot more provisions that we typically don't discuss, some of which have no impact on Minnesota. For example, when Congress extends a credit that's allowed at the federal level and for which we have no corresponding credit, that will be in the federal law, but we typically don't discuss it because it has no effect on state taxable income or state tax revenues. So, you know, they did a lot of things that don't really matter for our income tax, and the things they did that do matter for our income tax are listed in the revenue estimate. So that's, I guess I'm not sure what information you want beyond the listing that's in the revenue estimate, but maybe if you can explain that, I'd be happy to try to provide it.
Let's talk afterwards, because
okay.
I would like to get that out. Okay, other discussion to the A11 amendment. The Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
Chair Davids?
No.
Vice Chair Barrett?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Dabney?
Aye.
Graskowski?
No.
Earhart?
Yes.
Erickson?
No.
Koznick?
No.
Lesch?
Aye.
Loeffler?
Aye.
Loon?
No.
Petersburg?
No.
Simonson?
No.
Simonson?
Aye.
Swazinski?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
Wills?
No.
There being 6 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Item next. Do we have another? Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would offer the H-287-1A-12 amendment.
Okay, if the page could please pass those out, and if you could please describe that, Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to keep my comments relatively short, but this is a really important amendment that I'm sure we're going to make some progress on, if for no other reason than the fact that the A-12 would provide full conformity to Section 179, the increased federal expensing levels, which is an incredibly popular deduction for both small businesses and farmers. And I think if you want to get deeper into the weeds of how this works, we can maybe ask staff. But this is, even I hear about this provision, Mr. Chair, which oftentimes doesn't reach the city of Duluth. But this is a popular one, and I know that you're supportive. So we'd appreciate your support today, and I'd ask for a roll call.
Okay. Representative Simonson moves the H-287-1A-12 amendment and has asked for a roll call. There will be a roll call. Discussion from members. And members, this is really, really a good amendment. This is a good one, but I hope you'll vote no, because, you know, the other thing about voting yes on this one is we'd be having another stop over to see Chairman Knobloch on this one, because there's a bunch of money involved here. Not that I don't like seeing Chairman Knobloch, I'd just soon not go there. he's a wonderful person. Chairman Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, earlier in our meeting, I noticed some language in the summary of the bill about large and ponderous machinery, and, you know, I think I might have some large and ponderous machinery on my farm, and I just was hoping that we could clarify that definition.
Chair Torkelson, what kind of machinery?
Large and ponderous.
Ponderous?
That's what it says right here, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Michael, could you ponder what is ponderous? I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, I hadn't either, Mr. Chair.
Large, I understand. Large.
I do too, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate it. It's language that's actually being removed from the bill, but it's on the second page of the House Research Bill Summary, item number 6.
Large and ponderous. What is that?
I'm trying to find out, Mr. Chair, because I think it might be related to this Section 179 deduction, and I just want to make sure that, you know, I think I agree with you that this is a really good amendment that we should vote no on, but...
Michael?
Mr. Chairman, that reference is in the... you know, it was in the department's original technical bill, and it's being repealed as part of the sales tax exemption for capital equipment. And that terminology was used in the property tax area as well as the sales tax area, generally referring to, you know, very large industrial equipment what becomes an issue is it a fixture or is it, you know, personal property? Is it so big you can't move it, etc.? And that, you know, it's ancient terminology in the department's, you know, have requesting that it be removed. So
Chair Torkelson?
If you invested in it, you probably would invest not so much, you could qualify for Section 179, but there is a $500,000 limit on Section 179, and most of that large and ponderous equipment was probably over $500,000.
I guess, Chair Torkelson, is one of those things where if you buy a ponderous piece of equipment, you'll know it.
You know, Mr. Chair, I think I'm just going to have to ponder that.
Okay, thank you, Chair Torkelson. Other discussion to the 812 amendment? The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Davids.
No.
Vice Chair Barrett.
No.
Anderson.
No.
Carlson.
Aye.
Dabney.
Aye.
Draskowski.
No.
Earhart.
Yes.
Erickson.
No.
Kosnick. Lesch.
Aye.
Loeffler.
Aye.
Loon.
No.
Petersburg.
No.
Simonson.
Aye.
Buzinski.
No.
Torkelson.
No.
Wills.
No.
There being six ayes and 10 nays, getting closer, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Item next. And is that it for amendments? Any other amendments? Okay, thank you very much. I think that was a good discussion. I really want to do the conformity, work with the department on how this might be done. I do have to say one of my favorite parts would be the Simonson A12 amendment on the Section 179. But just so members know, the governor is looking at about $117 million in tax relief, the Senate $300 million. I don't have numbers yet, so I don't know where I'm at. But that costs about $150 million, the Section 179, to conform with that. So that one's going to be tough. I like it, but it's going to be tough. Any other discussion on House File 2071 as amended? Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, being that you referenced those amendments, I'm just going to share. I happen to get up early in the morning in WCCO TV each week as the educator of the week. And this morning, when I was watching it at about 5 a.m., there was a teacher that they recognized who was an ELL teacher. I don't remember which school district, but she teaches a lot of low-income and immigrant children. And one of the things that she sometimes observes is that they don't have clothing for cold weather and that kind of thing, any number of needs. And the point that they made on WCCO was that this teacher often out of her own pocket provides those children with a needed sweatshirt, I think was one example they used this morning during cold weather. The teacher said, I talked to the children privately, and they were elementary, so it's not a discussion, obviously, that takes place in front of the class, but she will sometimes call them aside and ask if they need any warm weather clothing, and then she often provides it. And there were other things as well. So, that was a provision to make those kinds of expenses permanent. So that was in the Dabney Amendment, and I just happened to think of that as we were talking because it was a very real issue this morning and what that teacher does.
And point well taken, I think, Chair Dabney, I think that's in the conference, that provision. Am I correct? I think we took your... Oh, I guess it's not. Maybe. Soon. Okay. Any other discussion or on House File 2071 as amended? Okay, I will renew my motion that House File 2071 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, with that, that's our agenda for the day. Tomorrow we're going to be having a, no votes or anything, but we're going to have a bill regarding the flat tax. And fair tax. Oh, you guys get that wrong. Fair tax, right?
Yes.
The fair tax. Okay. So with that, is there anything else come before for the good of the order? If not, members, don't stop believing good government all the time. We are adjourned.